something. All right, let's go to the Liberty County Board School Board Workshop Monday, June the 12th, 2023, with a joint workshop with Liberty County Board of County Commissioners come to order. We're going to open with a prayer led by Mr. Stanley and a pledge by Mr. Flowers.
Lord, thank you for the day. I thank you for the opportunity, Lord, to serve and give to you this county in which we live. God, we ask you to be in our midst tonight. God, give the school board and county commissioners, Lord, the wisdom they need, Lord, to be servants of you. We love you and thank you for all that you do in our lives. In Jesus' name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Moving right along to item number two, discussion. Ms. Jennifer Schubert would like to talk with us.
Yes, I welcome everybody to the district workshop. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the district workshop. I thought what we could do for format, I talked to Chairman Hayes and Chairman Casale that I could briefly go do an overview of the law as it relates pertains to redistricting, and then Mr. Kurt Spitzer is here to give a presentation. He's the redistricting consultant that the Board of County Commissioners has hired. And then at the end of that, then we take questions from board members and the public. If the public has questions, I just thought it'd be good to kind of get through the basic information first that may answer some of the questions that people have. This is a workshop, so no formal action can be taken by either board, but the board can give direction. This redistricting consultant, Mr. Kurt Spitzer, is here. I'll tell you, he's very well regarded in Florida. In fact, I talked to some other county attorneys and school board attorneys who called him the guru. So I think that we have someone here that has a lot of knowledge about the subject matter, and I urge you all to use this time to make the most of your questions for him. I wanted to point out that he's going to give a presentation up there. Unfortunately, it's not the same as I tried to take some of these away. It's not the most updated. What he's going to present you is the most updated slides. I think there was a printer problem and we didn't get enough copies for everybody. So we're looking at his slides. I also passed out to everyone, and there's a couple of copies over there on the table too, the most current law on redistricting. And I also passed one out at our last redistricting workshop. But if you picked it up then, disregard it, because since our last redistricting workshop, which we couldn't have because of the tornado, there's a new law that's come into effect. It was passed by the legislature, signed by the governor, and it does affect this redistricting process. So I put the most recent law that incorporates this new bill. It should be in front of everyone. And I'm just gonna go over that real briefly, the law as it pertains to redistricting in Florida. The Florida Constitution addresses redistricting of county Board of County Commissioners, and I've kind of highlighted on this sheet the most pertinent part as far as redistricting. But when it talks about the Board of County Commissioners seats, it talks about their terms, and then it says in the Florida Constitution, after each decennial census, the Board of County Commissioners shall divide the county into districts of contiguous territory as nearly equal in population as practicable. One commissioner residing in each district shall be elected as provided by law. And I kind of wanted to start there because I know that I've heard some voices in the community saying, why are we doing this? Why are we wasting our money on this? Liberty County doesn't need to do this. I disagree respectfully with that conclusion. I think that the Florida Constitution mandates that after the census comes out, which right now we're working with our 2020 census, that the Board of County Commissioners and the school boards have a constitutional obligation to engage in this process. And I think the Supervisor of Elections did the right thing by bringing it to our attention that we've got some old redistrict, redistricts. Our districts are not updated. How that this happens is also addressed in Florida statutes. In Florida Statute 124.01, it says, there shall be 5 county commissioners' districts in each county, which shall be numbered 1 to 5 inclusive, and shall be as nearly equal in proportion to population as practicable. So this kind of mirrors the constitutional language when it talks about having the population in each district be as equal as possible or practicable. It also says, in the highlighted pertinent part, the Board of County Commissioners shall from time to time fix the boundaries of the county commissioners' districts so as to keep them nearly equal in proportion to population as practicable, provided, okay, so here we go into the new changes that have been made to Florida statute since this new law came into effect, which is HB 411. HB 411 just passed in this legislative session. It was signed by the governor, and it's current law. Now what the legislature has also said is that you can't make any changes to the districts 270 days before a regular general election. And there's also a section on that affects school districts. I'm going to get to that too. But for the purposes of this Florida Statute 124, it says 270 days before a regular election for the Board of County Commissioners. And now the new language says districts may not be drawn with the intent to favor or disfavor a candidate for county commission or an incumbent county commissioner based on the candidate's or incumbent's residential address, any ordinance enacted or adopted by the county on or after July 1st, 2023, which is in conflict with this subsection, is void. If you look to the second page of the sheet that I passed out, it kind of has mirroring language with respect to school districts. In Florida Statute 1001.36, it says, for the purpose of electing district school board members, each district shall be divided into at least 5 district school board member residence areas, which shall be numbered 1 to 5 inclusive, and which shall, as nearly as practicable, be equal in population. A school district may make any changes it deems necessary in the boundaries of any district school board member residence at any meeting of the school of the district school board, provided that, again, here we have the same changes that the legislature made to the county commissioner's redistricting language, that you can't make a change 270 days before a general election, and that the residence areas may not be drawn with the intent to favor or disfavor a candidate for school district board member or an incumbent, and that any resolution adopted after July 1st, 2023, which is in conflict, is void. So I want to say that when we started this redistricting process, I know that our consultant, we were not operating under this new law, and our consultant did generate some district, possible maps, redistrict maps to everyone that has, that identifies the sitting board members' residence. So I know they're out there. I don't think that paints our process necessarily. For purposes of this workshop, we've given you some maps that don't identify residence areas, but I will say this, if the boards take action to redistrict and you redistrict before July 1st, you can consider the residence areas of the sitting district board members, basically. After July 1st, if you were to redistrict, you cannot consider the sitting board members' addresses. So that has traditionally been a criteria that has been acceptable. The legislature is now saying it's not acceptable, but there is a window of time where you could act and you can consider when you're drawing those lines where our sitting board members are living. So, again, I will take questions at the end of this along with Mr. Spitzer. I'm just going to make a couple more comments. You know, that where redistricting this law comes from, it comes from our Florida Constitution and statutes. It also comes from some federal constitutional principles. The Equal Protection Clause basically ensures the principle of one person, one vote. That's what's kind of driving this desire, or this mandate, I should say, to have the districts as equal as possible, practicable in population, is sort of this constitutional idea that one person, one vote principle, everybody should, we should have these districts be equal so that the representatives have an equal, kind of as equal number of people as possible in their districts. That's just a sort of a fairness principle. There is a little bit of different case laws that have developed. There's a Florida case law that is developed, and there's federal case law that's developed. In Florida, there's a few Supreme Court cases that address redistricting, and there's a very early case that says you don't have any discretion, basically, to deviate from this equal as possible ideal. There are some later cases that give some more discretion to deviate from this equal as possible and practicable ideal. As long as you're focusing on sort of neutral redistricting principles, I think what you cannot do, and what the legislature now makes clear that you can't do, is to draw lines to benefit a candidate or an incumbent. That's called gerrymandering. You're never going to find any case that says that that's okay. Federal law has sort of come up with the, Mr. Spitzer is going to talk about this 10% deviation that's been recognized in the law. That is something that's really been developed in federal case law. And I did read a 2016 U.S. Supreme Court case on that. Again, you're trying to get the districts as equal in population as practicable. You can have some deviation. The deviation that really is going to be acceptable always is 10% and less. Greater deviations, to have them upheld if you were to be challenged in court, again, you need to be basing the decision on these legitimate objective criteria that Mr. Spitzer is going to talk to you about. Keeping districts compact, maintaining communities of interest, considering geographic boundaries, that type of thing. One of the things I've also been asked about, I know I'm kind of plowing through this, but again, I'm more than happy to take questions at the end of the both presentations, is whether the prison population should be counted or not. I think traditionally, prison populations were counted because prison population is counted in the census, and the census is really kind of what drives redistricting. I will say that in Florida in 2016, there was a Florida federal court case that struck down a Jefferson County redistricting plan because it included the prison population, because the court ruled that it violated the one person, one vote type of equal protection principle. In other words, it's called prison gerrymandering, where you're basically flooding a district with prisoners, and then again, then you're back to the situation where you're not getting equal one person, one vote kind of protection. So there was this 2016 Northern District Court case that struck down that Jefferson County, and since then there has been a trend not to count the prison population. I think with the kind of the thinking is that prisoners don't vote, and they're separated. If they're separated from society, if they're not really voting in Liberty County and using the Liberty County of services, that type of thing. If they're an isolated population, then that's it doesn't make as much sense to count prisoners. I know that our consultant is also going to suggest that we not count prisoners just because we're so small that we practically have a district unto itself based on our prison population. There's also currently a bill in Congress that would allow the counting of prisons, because again, they call it prison gerrymandering. But those are kind of the legal principles I wanted to go over before Mr. Spitzer launches into his presentation. I'm going to let him take it over.
Districts have to be contiguous. You can't hopscotch from one over one district to continue another district. They should be relatively compact. You try to preserve communities of interest, whether it's a city, a neighborhood, things like that. And you still can consider existing district boundaries under the federal law. And you may consider future growth. There's some criteria for that. So we'll go through these here. Equal in population as is practical. In my view, we should review the need to redistrict after the census. The census day for 2020 was April 1st of 2020. As everybody knows, there are a lot of problems with the census this last time, primarily due to the COVID pandemic. The Bureau of the Census actually shut down field operations for a couple of months. The census is supposed to be due to Congress by the end of the year. It's not received until February, March. And the data to the states and local governments was supposed to be due by the end of March. It was not received until the end of September in 2021. But nonetheless, we should look at the need to redistrict. And as Jennifer mentioned, at least for county governments, it used to say you must redistrict in an odd number of years. Now the law says 270 days before the next general election. This is Article 8, which is the city and county article of the Florida Constitution. You shall divide the districts into contiguous territory that are as nearly equal in population as is practical. From Chapter 124, this is the new language, as nearly equal in proportion to population as is practical. For the school districts, similar language in terms of the district population should be almost equal. What does that mean? Well, I can tell you it's impossible to develop a plan where the districts are exactly equal in population. And not only is population the dominant criteria, but there's five or six other criteria that we'll go through here. And you sort of balance these together. We do the best that we can in developing the new plan. Generally speaking, plans where they are, the target is to get plans that are equal. There's no deviation from the average district size. That's really hard to do. But if you get plans where the largest one is maybe 3% over and the smallest is 3% under, that's a good target to try to get to. Population is not registered voters, it's population. The number of people who said, I live in Liberty County, that's what we use here. And in terms of the 10-point rule, if there are districts where the average, the discrepancy between the smallest and the largest is greater than 10 points, that can raise a red flag for the court. Speaking of Jefferson County, this was Jefferson County several years ago. They had the average size was a little bit under 3,000 people. One district was almost 5.5% over. The smallest district was about 7.5% under. And so it's a deviation not of 12.8%, but 12.8 points. And so that raises a red flag, and Jefferson County had to change their boundary lines to get it under that 10%. Threshold. So that's a short summary on population. We avoid plans that lose minority voting strength. We don't try to pack all of the minority population into one district, and we try to not divide the population amongst multiple districts so as to have the effect of diluting minority voting strength. We use census blocks that are readily available. The data is presumed to be correct in court. If you were out maybe 5 years from now for some reason you wanted to redistrict, you could supplement the census data with other bits of information. We've done that. Used either building permits or trends or the University of Florida data is also very good. But you have to have valid reasons why you do that. You can well document that in the process. But here, we're still relatively soon after the last census. there's no need to adjust the census data. We follow major natural or man-made boundaries. It's easier to understand. It's less disruptive to voter precincts. Almost always coterminous with the boundaries of census blocks. And it's easier for the voter to understand as well. Districts have to be contiguous. You can try to keep communities of interest together. And you avoid districts with so-called bizarre shapes. We all know the gerrymandering story, over Jerry from Massachusetts, where that term came from. Here's a more modern-day example. This plan was thrown out in court, and this is what that plan really looked like. This was a congressional district, and that was rejected by the Supreme Court in 1993. So you avoid districts that have bizarre shapes. So in summary, these are the general criteria. It's impossible to develop a plan where all of these criteria are met perfectly. So we do the best that we can, given the nature of the county and the change in the data. We balance these in concert with each other. So here's one quick little case study of Quincy. North of Tallahassee and Gadsden County. Quincy had not redistricted in 45 years. There was a court order ordering them to go from that large district to single member districts. After that happened and they redrew their district, they did not redistrict them in 45 years. And so that, as I recall, there was a 110-point spread between the smallest and the largest. So they were way out of whack. Here was the existing districts, and then the adopted plan, it got down to about a 5-point spread. And so it required significant changes from the boundaries, but the March 2020 plan was adopted by the City Commission, I think there was like 45 votes there. So for Liberty County, this is your current district's population, not including present population. And Jennifer mentioned this. Let me just touch on that real quickly. The present population, I believe, about 1,700 people. So with present population, the total population of the county gets closer to 8,000 people. And so if you divide that by 5, you come up with a target district size of around 1,600 people. So that's less than the population that lives in the present. And so now you could draw a district that was just around the present. That's one district. Or, since the present is kind of located in the northern end of the county, you could perhaps split that present population between the two northern districts in the county. But in any event, from a practical point of view, county present population is going to force consideration of very radical changes to the district shapes in Liberty County. And also, by the way, Judge Walker in Tallahassee in the Jefferson County case said, people in prison don't have the right to vote. They have no access to obtain the right to vote at the present time, not until they finish their sentences. And secondly, the county provides no services. They have their own water sewer system, food, health care, that sort of thing. And it violates the equal protection provision of the U.S. Constitution. So, we did not count the present population. This here is the current district without counting the present population. And as you can see, we're about 65 points apart in terms of the largest versus the smallest. That's way over 10 points. In federal law, there have been exceptions to that 10-point rule that are well documented, but I've never seen one that goes beyond about 16 points. So here we're at 60 or 65 points. So in my view, you need to change those boundaries. Let me go through these columns first, just to let you know what they are. The first column is the target population of each district. The second column is the actual population, and that's expressed in both total numbers of people and voting age, people who are 18 years old or older. They have the ability to vote. Sometimes in days gone by, you would see cities and counties that redistrict based on registered voters. You really shouldn't do that. But you can consider voting age population. And then there's the deviation in terms of numbers and percent, how many voters is the district, over or under the target size. And then there's a series of columns, three, on race, white, black, and others. And you have the same data. In the census form, there's like six different categories that someone can check off in terms of what race they are. White, black, Native American, Pacific Islander, things like that. And you can also handwrite something. Beginning with the last census and continuing with this one, the Bureau of the Census allowed people to check off more than one category. And not just two, but they could check up to five. And so there's multiple combinations of race that could be there. And so in white, it's just people who said, I'm a white Caucasian person. For black, the practice is to count people who said, I'm either a single race African American person, or I have two racial backgrounds, one of which is African American. The legislature uses three. If someone said, I'm of three different racial backgrounds, one of which is African American, they count that person as black or African American. But that, for here, is people who said, I'm of two racial backgrounds, one of which is black. Then for other, it's everything else. People who were Native Americans, and maybe three different racial combinations, but it's everything else. And then there's Hispanic. Hispanic is not a race, it's an ethnicity. And so I could say that I'm a white Hispanic person or a black Hispanic person, but it's not a race. And so when you want to total up the total number of people in each district or for the county, you add other black and white. If you add Hispanic, you get more people that don't really live here. So that's just all of the columns and all of the plans, that's what you see there. So we're at 65-point spread here. District 1 need to gain. District 1 and 4 need to gain. The other three need to lose population. And we'll get into this in a second when we jump over into the software. Our obligation to the county was to come up with two or three different plans, and it's difficult to do given the nature of the population and significant natural and man-made boundaries and things like those criteria. And so we came up with two plans in terms of population. They're identical to one another. The only difference is that one plan follows the existing boundary through the, I believe it splits the present area. The other plan follows Dempsey Barron Road in that area, but it doesn't change the population. Then the second plan, or 2A, the third plan, it's a very different plan, but I further. But they're both legally sufficient in terms of population. So I guess now we could take questions that you might have either for myself or the attorney.
Yeah, for as long as the census, that's the papers that they send out and you fill out and send back in. Is that what you're going by on these, on the population?
Well, what we're going by is either that or if someone submitted it to some other manner. But it's census data, it's 2020 census data from the Bureau of the Census.
I'm in a lot of houses every day, and I know a lot of people say that garbage cans, so they didn't want to fill that out. So I don't know how accurate your numbers are. And with COVID going on, I'm still not sure of how accurate people will be. Put a piece of paper in and touch anything. That just raises a red flag in my eyes, whatever on these numbers here. That's my opinion. I could be wrong.
We try to get the census tries to improve the data collection every decade. They have said that the census did undercount certain populations of African American and Hispanic folks primarily. I don't know if they've done this yet or not, but they were going to update those numbers for states, but they were not going to update those numbers for anything lower than at the state level. I'll say that it's the best that we have.
I've heard a lot of people say that. I don't know where they were. I know everybody knows where. I know they know where the ad is, but they don't feel nothing about us. Well, you know, whoever getting up with it, that'd be hard for me to go by that on the change of anything. That's just my opinion.
I have a Supreme Court case that is not here tonight, but they just called me for it at the end of the week. It was in Alabama on the same deal. The Supreme Court overruled because of the minority majority. And it's been going on for a few years, but they just ruled on it a week ago. And my district one is majority minority. And you start moving those lines and avenues, you change it to majority minority in district one. The prison population, I've been told, I've asked questions, we got a clerk here, we got a clerk here, and I talked to other clerks, but in some of our fundings, our prison population, from my understanding originally, was counted to start with for all the funding, some of the funding. So you take that out, you take some of the funding, and you're going off of registered age of voters in the district, five census that you have, not the actual people that vote in the county or in that district as you say.
On the point of funding and things like that, if you look at any data from Beaver, it's the University of Florida's Bureau of Economic and Business Research, they are the folks who provide data and population estimates from a whole range of areas to the state of Florida. They always pull out the present population.
One of your things there on your, like I said, on your highlight guidelines is don't dilute minority voters unless you're going to double, you're taking that away from my district by moving anything besides what it is today.
Right. And Judge Walker would say if you count the two parts I mentioned before, one is from a practical point of view, assuming we want to register, you got to get the populations as nearly equal as possible. So somehow you're going to have to deal with those 1,700 folks that live in that district. Either it's one district all by itself, or you try to split it amongst the two northern districts in the county. But then beyond that, Judge Walker has said violates the equal protection law because these folks can't vote. They have the ability to try to get the ability to vote because they're still incarcerated. And by counting them where they really can't vote, it dilutes the minority voting strength of everybody else.
I got a question. Through this whole packet we got here, it says the population. They don't say nothing about voting age, registered voters. It says the population. And the prison up there is part of the population of this county. And I don't know how a judge, I'm a dummy, I ain't no lawyer, but I don't know how a judge can change the law and the wording of the law to say they don't count. I don't understand that. He's going basically against the laws we have because it says the population.
Well, I'll say this, and Jennifer alluded to this as well. The census counts everybody. Prison population as well. And because of that, the law has evolved. Years ago, we counted everybody. Although there were some small counties, by the way, which that might have multiple prisons in them, and they have not counted both even prior to Judge Walker's decision. We redistricted Jefferson County, and we counted everybody, including the prison population. And there was a lawsuit that was brought either by the NAACP or the ACU in both that said the decision was you can't count the prison population. And the reason for that was that, as stated before, the county provides those services to these folks. They don't have the ability to vote for county commissioner or school board. And so that was a change in the law. And he said, you do not count the prison population.
But the county does provide some services to the prison population. Ambulance service. If they got one that got to go to the hospital, they call the county. They go get it. So we do provide services to the prison up there. And educational services is handled through the state mostly. But there is some coordination through the county that does. So based on what I've seen wrote right here, we should be basing our decisions on population, not on who's eligible to vote, how many voters we got in that county. Based on that, all these maps and numbers I've seen don't include any prison population. They took them out, and that skews the data over the last 10 or 20 years since our lines was drawn. And yeah, we've tweaked them some over the last 20 years, but basically they stayed the same.
Mr. Spitzer, I know you ran the numbers both with the prison population and the prison population not counted. Would the county, in your opinion, have to redistrict either way?
If you count prison population, that's 65 point spread. There you go.
Drop way down.
No, it goes way up.
I think it's between Rockwood and Oxford, right?
No. If you count the present population, what happens is that it adds significant population to those two districts in the north, one especially. The spread then is District 1 is 52% over the target. And District 4 is about 39% under the target. And so if you counted that population, you still would have to redistrict, and then you'd have to figure out how to deal with that present population.
So what, and I might be bad wrong, somebody correct me if I am, the prison population split up there going right down the center of the prison the last time we did this. So half of it was in Rock Bluff District, and half of it was in Hockers District, splitting it up. So that made these numbers almost balance out.
It's not split equally. There's a couple of blocks, census blocks, that comprise the prison area, and I have to go back and look at the data, but there's one district where the majority of the prison population is in, the overwhelming majority is in, and the other district is the lesser of the number.
So just to summarize what you're saying, in your opinion, we have to redistrict either way?
Yeah, it's not a question.
How hard would it be to move that line to split the prison 50-50?
Splitting blocks, it could be done. Splitting blocks is we try to avoid splitting blocks, but you could do it.
If you got 800 beds on this side of the room and 800 on this side, make that district line right between those 800 right beds. Well,
what they also do
sure.
is...
But then the problem is, you still will have this large number of people in these two different districts, and then the rest, I think you'll end up with maps that are even more different than
I thought it would kind of even out if you split the prison 50-50. I thought it would bring those two low districts, which after District 1 would probably go.
Well,
it go down.
If they split the prison back then, the prison is already full. Well, they took the work down off of one side and put it back on his side. So from the last data, there was probably more inmates on my side of the prison than this square than what they are now, because they built a new work camp. They moved the work camp into Doyle's district.
I got a trick question for you. Does that have to be a line, a specific line, or could you say in wording, don't even worry about a line. Half of the prison population goes to this district, half goes to this one. In the event that they change housing locations, would that be legal, or does it have to be a defined line?
If you want to have a line, I mean, the supervisor needs to have other precincts and things like that, so there needs to be a line there. But I think that's if you want to do that, and now we're talking about mechanics and how to include the counties, I suppose, when Judge Walker said no count.
And let me ask you this. Judge Walker, did anybody appeal his ruling?
No.
Can they?
Well, I don't know what the law is on how long. That was in 2016, but no one has yet. I don't. And we're in the middle of Jefferson County right now, and there's no interest in counting the prison population.
Can I ask? I want to echo what Jim said. The census that was done in 2020, I'm not feeling it either. I know a lot of people, and I personally know, and I bet you there's a lot of people in this room that took that census and put it in garbage. Grant, are you? I can't see you. Sorry. When you and I discussed this a while back, I'm gonna go back to the statutes in just a second of the Constitution. But you said that there was possibly some software coming down the pipe for you that may be implemented in approximately 2 years, a year, that you would be able to get a better, accurate count of population. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
It's the software that he has.
He has that software now?
And you can only use the information that you have.
Okay. I'm going somewhere. Just stay with me.
And he'll show you the software. And you have the five areas. This is how many is in this area. This is their race. This is their age. And then move on to another one, and the county builds up with a bunch of those. And that's what the districts are made of, with a bunch of census blocks. So if you go to split the census block, I have no idea. And he said he don't want to do it, but I would imagine that the difficulty of that. But that is the software that Jackson County was telling us about, because they did the redistricting and they had, where they could drag them out and people.
But it's all based on census numbers.
Okay, so
I was mistaken when I understood you to say that you would be able to actually know how many people are in the, okay, just based on the census.
I can't go knock on somebody's door and see that there's 10 people.
Right, that's physically. Right. Okay, so let me go back to the Constitution, because and tell me, you're an attorney, I'm going to turn to our attorney here. It says, after each census, the Board of County Commissioners shall divide the county into districts as nearly equal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that not leave us a little loophole there that we've been, I mean, could that be defended? That's pretty broad, as nearly. That's pretty broad language, in my opinion, but I'm not an attorney, you tell me. I mean, if we got pretty close, like we're talking about these lines,
mm-hmm.
I mean, and say we were, you know, somebody filed a suit against us, has that been challenged yet in court, this new language, or as nearly?
Okay, so that's the language that's been in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's
been in your part too.
Right, yeah, so this is not new language, this is the standard is that you try to get them as nearly as equal, and as far as variation, a 10% variation and lower, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, is presumptively acceptable. Basically, that's within the level of variance. That's
mm-hmm.
okay. Anything above a 10% variance is a red flag, and then to have a greater variance than that upheld in court, you'd have to have kind of some reasons for that, like objective reasons. For instance, I read a court case where it was a county that had a rural area and then a tourist area, and the tourist area was just growing really fast. So basically, the court is saying, yes, there's a higher variation here, but we've got some things happening in the population that are changing. So, right, it doesn't have to be equal. You get some variance. 10% below is considered the acceptable variance. If you go above that, then you want to have reasons that you have these kind of objective, non-politically partisan reasons, I guess I put it that way.
Thank you.
I did kind of also want to mention, because I know we're talking about minority representation, Liberty County does have at-large elections, which, so everybody gets to vote for every commissioner, school board member. What I've seen is when there's been sort of race-related challenges to the districting or to the districts, that is usually drives more of a single-member district kind of situation, which is not what Liberty County has. But in the past, I think there have been some challenges based on that. But we don't have single-member districts, we have that large districts.
And based on, I guess, new legislation they find this year, it don't matter where you live in the county, if I wanted to go down and run in District 5, I could qualify down there to run. And if I was elected to that position, then I would just have to move and live there on the first day that I took office.
That is new law for school district.
I did not
see that
that's
also
the
law for
it.
Huh?
to run to be a candidate in a district, you have to live in that district.
I think they have changed that.
Yeah, they changed it for school board members.
I think they changed the game to live for them.
School board member.
The county was already up with it. Because I challenged that for about 3 years ago. I've had a man run against me ever since I've been in the district. It's not in my district. They told me that when you was county commissioner, on the county commissioner side, when you could run, and I could run against Dole. But I had to move in that district if I had to.
Yeah.
Grant, and what the legislature did this year for, and I can't speak to county commissions, I haven't researched it, but what they did change for school board members in Florida statute 1001.361, they changed it to say each elected candidate for district school board member must, by the date she or he assumes office, be a resident of the district school board member residence area from which he or she was elected at the date that they assume office. So they did make that change for school district members.
But we're talking about countywide. Yes, we all agree with countywide, but we still have district. That's what we're talking about, district lines. And then putting those people in that district. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I got one copy, which was I just got back home, and that was given to me about this Supreme Court ruling in Alabama, which was this last week, by taking the minority and majority out of it. And that affects, if you take out the prison population and change mine, that changes the whole game back to what the county went through in the 80s. And just what they just Supreme Court just voted in Alabama last week. I think this case is in Alabama for the one since 2016, somewhere over there. But it just affects mine by taking it out and dramatically on the minority majority, which is on that topic. One of the bullet meetings. That's just where I stand. I don't have much more than that. I'm kind of with James about the prison population, where it's been. And my opinion, I give my final opinion, and everybody else can call it. But we leave it like it is. If the state or whoever makes us change, then we can say, look, this is the reason we did it. But as of now, I say leave it like it is and keep on trucking. That's my final opinion.
So my question to that, I hear we've got to redistrict. We've got to save within 10%. Okay? And if we didn't redistrict, what would happen?
Okay, so if you don't redistrict and you're challenged, a court could make you redistrict.
There's no who could challenge it. Mm-hmm. Anybody in the world.
Anybody who's disgruntled, yeah, could challenge it. I mean, will you get challenged? I don't know. I mean, maybe. But I will say this, if you're challenged after July 1st, you will not be able to consider sitting members.
What?
So up to July 1st, you know, we've been able to kind of get, and I know some counties that are kind of starting to kind of speed up their process to try to get theirs done before July 1st. But if you were to get challenged and a court made you redistrict, which could happen but may never happen, I don't know, in the future you would not be able to consider their sitting.
Yeah, let me say this. Adding prison numbers back into the numbers that's on this page of actual population. This is what I got the district breaking down to. 1659 for District 1, 1604 for District 2, 1359 for District 3, 1692 for District 4, and 1621 for District 5. And the deviation from these numbers, we would put District 3 I split the prison 50-50 on it. And that's the numbers. That means District 3 would be the least populated district. So we'd have to adjust District 2 and District 4. We would consider that redistricting. If we did anything, we would be redistricting, right? If we move these lines, we would work.
Yes, you would be redistricting the new lines.
I'm asking this question. You have to get the prison stays in, is there a way?
Well,
right now today, the prison's in there.
Yeah. And according to the rules, you ain't going to get them exactly 50-50. You're going to get...
That's not actually what's going on anyway. That's what the census is. I'll tell you when that goes out.
Well, the prison's probably the only accurate census there is.
Yeah.
Every person there is counted.
Well, you know what's sitting out there.
Yeah.
People, I mean, they was warning me about COVID. Staying on a piece of paper alive for so many days.
Oh, yeah.
People wasn't touching it. They wasn't...
And a lot of
that was the last thing
people
heard about was filling piece of paper out of the memory yet.
Well, you said people filing against it if you did redistrict, you know, court coming up if you don't. If you do change these lines, I guarantee you you're going to have a lot of filing against redistricting just from the population. So either way,
I mean, you take
either way,
you out of District 1 and a few out of one of the other districts and balance up District 3. So, you know, I ain't got all the answers, I just got a bunch of questions and thoughts and stuff like that.
This is a question for you. It says that the changes cannot be made within 270 days of the regular election. So if both boards said not going to do anything and we brought down the road, can we can do it before the next general election? Is this at any time, or can we only do it right after that? Because I know my question at last meeting was, because it said odd number of years, so I knew that we're in 2023, so if we choose no action, we can consider it again in 2025. But with this new language, can we consider, I don't know, can we only do it up until 270 days before this election, and then it's done until the next census, or after that?
Then it's done until
the next election.
Until within
270 days before the next
2026.
So what the effect of that for counties is that you get a couple more months of breathing room. It used to be you had to get it done by the end of the odd number year, by December 31st. I think, you know, you back out 270 days from the general election in February or something. So it's a little bit more breathing room. But then if you miss that, then you're off the next 270-day period in the next general election.
So when is that deadline for...
Well, I don't know the next... It's in February.
February?
I don't know what the 2024 general election is going to be. I don't know. November 10th. So you back up 270 days from November 6th. It comes with, I believe it's in February.
And then you have to go by census block. Well, you said you don't have to. If you use census blocks, how many blocks is the prison in? Is it two census blocks? And are there other homes outside, like if we...
No. There are. It's spread over two census blocks. There are no... From a satellite image, there's no other residential area. There are some, you know, residences for people who work in the prisons.
But it doesn't cover...
It's in those blocks. Okay. But it's, and there are, of course, there's other people who don't live on prison grounds, but they go to work.
So the prison's in two blocks then? I thought just a while ago it said it's just one block.
It's split among two blocks, two census blocks.
So how many is in each block?
I'd have to go back and look, but it's around 1,700 people total, and the great majority are in one block, and I think this is off just off the top of my head, but I believe it's 300 or 400 in the other block.
I thought it said the primary block is located in District 1, this is District 24, and has 1,612, 13 people. The other block is located in District 4 and has 139.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Which I don't understand why. That's probably that work we had out there now, and the rest of the prisons in the city for not out of the middle of the future.
You was talking about Judge Walker was excluding the prison population. But he would take into consideration also that by us making these changes, we're changing from a majority minority district that will not, the minority won't be the majority again.
Well, it's almost the same thing in Jefferson County. I'm not Judge Walker. He would say part of that majority minority are folks that can't vote. And that they have no ability to get the right to vote at the present time. So,
are there any other questions?
How do you know where the drug that you take, they came from? How do you know it?
Well, people who are incarcerated in a state or federal prison.
I know that one. I'm talking about other states.
What? For the, there are maybe, off the top of my head, maybe 10 or 15 people who are in those, who reside in those two blocks that are not incarcerated. And so certainly they work there. And so they, I don't know if they have registered to vote or not, but they certainly could have the ability to vote. But most folks who are in those blocks are incarcerated and they do not have the ability to vote at the present time.
I think she may be asking also in the whole county. There may be people that are registered voters and may have lost the right to vote. How do you know? How do those numbers play in where you might have, you know, because you got to go through clemency and all that to get your rights back. Now that's a question. How many felons do you have that maybe aren't counted?
Don't know. For folks who are incarcerated, that there is a certain code that the census has, but if they are not incarcerated, if they have lost the right to vote and haven't gained that back, we don't know how many people that is.
So you assume they have the right to vote? Pretty much. If they're not incarcerated.
They are counted like anybody else.
Right.
If they responded to it before, they are counted like anybody else.
Any more questions, anybody? Grant, you okay? Anybody else?
I'm just gonna say this. I just think we're going to leave it alone. In my opinion, like it sits. And there haven't been no issues. I can tell you, start changing. There's gonna be some issues. There will be some challenges. But it's worked like it is. State ain't said anything. And if the state, if whoever comes in and makes those changes, say, hey, look, we don't have no choice. But right now, one of the main key points that he's got up there at Holy is the majority minority. And that is the majority minority. Whether we look countywide or not,
there'd be still breaking down districts. I'm not talking about the county way. And that's just my opinion.
Lady.
Mayor Dana?
I don't know about the actual Jefferson City single member district.
Pretty sure they are.
I suspect they're a single member, but I don't know.
Yes, I got a question. You're talking about changing the district. You change the district, you have to live there. You change the district, a lot of people don't have transportation. You know, you change the district, they don't get snuck, you don't vote. You stay like a district.
The voter precincts, whatever you redistrict, the precincts will have to follow along with the district lines, and the precincts will change in some place.
Yeah, but next week over here, you want to change up a little lot of justice. A lot of them don't have transportation to get a lot of justice.
Yeah, you were voting on it.
Yeah.
They're different one, but there's different precincts that they can vote at. And one of the precincts is in Rock Bluff, the other one's at City Hall, and the other one, I think, is. Yeah.
Anybody in the county can vote for us.
Right.
Not on election day, but early voting, or anyone can vote.
Any other question? At this time, I'd like to thank the county commissioner, the clerk, for joining us today. Mr. Grant, y'all being here. Need a motion to adjourn. Motion. Motion by Mr. Flower, Singletary, second by Mr. Flower. Meeting adjourned.